I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Innovation and Leadership. I'm Jess Larson. This is part two of our interview with Trip Crosby.
That evolved. So that started way up at the top as a list of sketches that I had written. And then I eventually felt the inspiration to go back to them and kind of rewrite them. And then I had an idea for what to do with them. And so I moved them down. And now I'm actually revising all of these ideas into a live show. So that will probably be about a two-year process overall.
Trip, in part one, we were talking about, you know, building a YouTube channel with 75 million views and working with brands and how you're bigger and bigger into Instagram these days. But one of the things that I was really interested in that we were kind of closing off was you made this comment that to be really funny, to write really well, that you need to be less busy. You know, there's some science out there. There's a great book by Cal Newport called Deep Work. There's some science about, you know, part of the brain that they accidentally found when they were putting people in fMRI machines, of how they call it the default mode network, of like they thought their machines were broken because the brain was lighting up when they weren't having them do anything, and they discovered this other part of our brain.
Wow, I don't know about this.
It's kind of related to, like, you know, how Isaac Newton thinks up the gravity stuff while he's sitting in a garden. You know, how many of the great discoveries were found right when somebody was on a walk? Or, like, you talk about, you know, one of Einstein's coworkers said that they would leave for lunch, he'd be holding a piece of chalk, staring at the chalkboard, and they come back from lunch and he's still standing in the same spot, still staring, you know?
Right.
So, anyways, it's obviously a little bit, it's a different domain, but the principle seems to apply for you as well. Can you talk about this, having the room to create or have ideas come to you?
I can talk about it, and I love talking about it, because I actually think it expands way beyond just the creative field and into any position that anyone has anywhere with any interest in innovating at all. I believe that people, they don't want to just show up to work and pull the same lever every day that someone handed them. I believe people are more satisfied when they can actually find ways to improve themselves and improve their position. And that requires innovation. And innovation requires ideas and thoughts. And the creative field, it especially does. There's some of us out there that if we don't have good ideas, we don't have a paycheck. So I obsess over how to have more better ideas. And what I keep learning in more ways than one is that I have to stop more. I have to just do less stuff. I have to be less busy. And what I learn when I do that is that I wasn't even really doing anything in the first place. Did you see that article that just came out? I want to say it was New York Times. There's a company in Australia, a big company, that just cut all of their employees' hours from 40 hours to 30 hours a week. And not only after they did that, when they resurveyed, not only did they discover that the level of satisfaction went up, but also the level of productivity went up. So they were getting more done with less time, which makes me go, what was everyone doing with that 10 hours? What are we doing with our time? Are we accomplishing, or are we just doing? And I look at myself all the time, and I'm always reinventing my schedule because I'm convinced that I'm just doing stuff to feel productive, even though I'm not being productive. Because I think we have this need to feel productive. I also think that we are avoiding something usually. Like, we stay busy to avoid stillness, to avoid facing reality, as I would say it more straightforwardly. Like, there's something about reality that we don't want to acknowledge, so we just distract ourselves. And when we do that, we really are clouding our mind, and we're preventing ourselves from having really good ideas. That was a lot of words for one question, so I'll stop talking and let you ask me more. So I could just keep going for like 90 minutes on this.
No, you know, this year I reread a book that actually we had him on the show, Perry Marshall, called 80-20 Sales and Marketing. And I finally went and found the books that inspired him to write his. And they're by a former Bain consultant, BCG consultant named Richard Koch. And he's been incredibly successful. I think he turned $26 million into over $300 million through his venture capital investing. And he wrote these books like the 80-20 Principle and the 80-20 Manager, just kind of taking the concept we're all familiar with that, you know, probably 80% of our results come from 20% of our efforts. And just like diving down that rabbit hole further and further. And it's interesting to me to just hear evidence of it over and over again. Like,
yeah.
I think about how many emails I return, how many conversations that I have with folks during my work hours. You know, it's tough when you're the CEO, so to be disciplined and call them work hours because it feels like they're all your hours.
It's all the time, right?
But really, like, I don't know that I do stare it in the face and go, is this really the best use of my time? Instead, I just pick up the ringing phone.
Yeah, there's too much anxiety. It's like all the what ifs. There's the, I get it. You know, part of my story begins this way. So like the very first viral video that we had that put us on the map, that even set up the opportunity for us to have a career in digital shorts, was it came out of a time in my life where I was so fed up with my career that I just stopped everything. I was young enough and my overhead, my living expenses were so small that I could just do that. I just took a month and stopped working and just did a lot of staring at the ceiling, thinking about what I actually wanted to do. And it was in that I discovered making comedy shorts. So I had a successful video business at the time. I was working with lots of companies. I was making more and more money every month, shooting, editing, selling. And I hated it. I couldn't figure out why. So I stopped and I just wasn't willing to, I don't know what my plan was, honestly. I was like 25 years old and kind of dumb, but I just stopped and I got so bored that I picked up my video camera one day and just started playing with it. And I called some friends over and we started making comedy shorts with no plan. That's what I wanted to do when I was bored enough. And that's when we made this sketch called Things You Can't Do When You're Not in a Pool. And 2 weeks later, we were all over the mainstream news media for some short that went viral and in a time where that was a new thing. And looking back, I'm like, that was the best decision I ever made, was just stopping and thinking. And letting myself discover what was really going on inside my brain, like what the valuable thoughts actually were.
You know, you can tell I'm kind of a book nerd since that's all I've talked about here.
Yeah, but, and you can tell I'm not because I don't reference anything.
Yeah, so studious. The secret is I don't actually read any of these books. I'm all audio.
audio.
But
there's time to read.
There's one that I really enjoy by Ryan Holiday called The Perennial Seller, about making creative works that'll last at least a decade. And he talks about just this concept of needing to say no to things. And some of his other books about the Stoics talks about how the word decision actually comes from the root word to die. And that it's this idea of like having the guts to let options die so that we can do something else. And I think that's really what my problem is so often is, I want to lie to myself that I can do it all, or I have the fear that I'm killing the wrong option. And so instead I don't decide anything and I keep trying to do it all. And then I end up doing it poorly. Right.
That's the story of my life, except for that one time.
You know,
I totally get it.
I'd be interested as well to hear more of what the creative process is like for you you know, the part behind the scenes that people don't see. What, Is it on a napkin and then you stew on it for a few days and you play with it and you revisit it in a week? Or do you know, at a more granular level, logistical level, what does that look like for you?
Well, I would divide the creative works into two categories. There's the client work, which looks like this. There's some sort of engagement where we decide to work together and we start brainstorming and putting ideas on the table, and there's lots of concept revisions, and then once we choose a concept, their scripts are written, and then there's revisions. It's a very straightforward creative process to write a commercial or a comedy sketch when there's a client involved. For the stuff that I'm most proud of, I have this board in my office, and I'm looking at it right now, and there's all of these note cards that are different colors that just have any idea that I've thought of that in my mind would be worth accidentally looking at again when I look to my right. So I just let this sit up here, and I try and create time in my life to develop some of it any of it as far as I can. It's divided into three categories. I have the top section, which is like just any idea that I liked 24 hours later. Then there's the middle section, which is, okay, I've started down this road. Like, this is something that's worth continuing to work on. And then there's a third section, which are ideas that I've gone really far down and I intend to finish, and there might even be a deadline involved. And so I let these kind of organically develop, I guess, but categorizing them in that way helps me prioritize. That's my creative process for the fun stuff. I wish you could actually see what I'm talking about. That may have been hard to visualize.
No, it's okay. But I'd be interested to just ask a follow-up question there.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break from the sponsor,
okay,
and then I'll ask it.
Okay.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Okay, so before the sponsor break, I was saying that I kind of wanted to go a little deeper. So mm-hmm. when you put that idea up there, you know, the colored cards mm-hmm. that are up on the board, how long could that take before you do something with it? Or what would be the process when you go back and you go, no, that's the best card up there, I'm going to do something with it?
Yeah.
What's that look like?
It could be a week or 2 years.
Yeah.
It just depends on what it is. I mentioned at the very beginning that I'm working on a live performance. So that evolved. So that started way up at the top as a list of sketches that I had written. And then I eventually felt the inspiration to go back to them and kind of rewrite them. And then I had an idea for what to do with them. And so I moved them down, and now I'm actually revising all of these ideas into a live show. So that will probably be about a 2 year process overall. But then sometimes there's an idea up there. I'll give you an example, a specific example. Most people are familiar, if they're familiar with anything I've done, they're familiar with a video called A Conference Call in Real Life. Well, the one I've been wanting to do to follow up the most is tech support calls in real life, or customer support calls in real life. So that, like that, when that hit me, I put it on the board way up top, and then going into, like, very quickly, I was able to go, no, I need to find I need to do something with this. So I moved it down to the middle section, and I worked on a treatment for it. I put together a little sales deck, and just recently we sold the idea to a brand. So now that is like fully in production. That's going to be we'll call that a 6 month idea. And actually, now that I think about it, 6 month might be the minimum for something on my board, because I revisit stuff a lot and I change it. And this board is for ideas that I'm not willing to compromise on. It's gotta be executed in a way that exceeds what I even thought it was in the beginning. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's interesting having that internal standard for yourself.
It's interesting, and it's also a curse, because that's why a lot of the stuff stays up here. Sometimes I probably just need to like take more action and not be such a perfectionist.
Yeah.
So I'm never happy with how it comes out anyway.
Well, you know, the business of getting attention mm-hmm. is almost been glorified by the way the media will follow up and say, look at this viral video, right?
Right.
And you know, it's pretty hard to attract new clients if they don't know your brand exists. I mean, like,
right.
There's some pretty straightforward things about this. But because of all that, it is highly competitive, and with technology evolving, and, you know, how many years ago there was no Snap or Snapchat, right? And then,
right.
You know, the whole business takes a slight right angle for a bit, you know, with
right.
these things. Being in this, you know, so deep, and I'm sure knowing other creatives well, as you look at what's coming down the pipe, the next year, the next 3 years, what kind of things do you see that maybe not everybody recognizes, or how do you see this world evolving?
Man, that's a good question. I think that while the technology becomes more and more accessible, while we see more and more content getting out there, I think the good stuff still rises to the top. I'm not threatened by that as much as some people would be. I think all of the good shows will still be on HBO, and all of the good videos will show up on our YouTube, our Facebook feed, organically anyway, the organic ones. For me personally, the reason this might be hard to answer, to be just completely transparent, is that I am getting kind of like exhausted by the attention business. Sometimes I tell my wife, I'm like, it just, I'm tired of having to have a good idea all the time. Like, can I start a lawn business? Like, sometimes I just want to do something repetitive and use my body and not my brain, because it just never got, the goalpost just keeps moving, you know, it just gets harder. And I want to learn how to be more satisfied with what I have done and where I am, instead of always feeling like I'm just on the verge of really, really landing on that idea that's going to take things to the next level. What is the next level? I don't know. I get to make silly videos with my friends. What else do I want in life? Nothing. More time with my kids. That's really it.
It's interesting, the seasons of life, though.
You know,
I had a real, you know, I call it my quarter life crisis when I switched from finance to consulting, and it's been great and I love it, but I kind of always kept my toe in the finance side, and I've got some, you know, large investment fund clients that our consulting firm consults to. And, it's interesting as I look at my future and, you know, kind of the next 30 years of my career, if I last that long, what do I, you know, if I was going to focus on something, what do I want to focus on? And it's interesting how that can evolve over time, right?
Right. Well, when I started, I only had to have good ideas because I wanted to. Like, I wasn't in the business of it yet. And so we were having fun, and we discovered we were good at something, and that started paying off. But then once it started paying off, then you have to maintain, right? So now I have to have ideas, and that feels different.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to, my next phase of life is going to be creating way more space and getting away from the pressures of having to have ideas so that I can.
You know, it's interesting how it takes guts to not just stick with what's working so far. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were newlyweds, you know, 16 years ago in Huntington Beach, California, my wife took care of kids for a couple of doctors, and she hated her job. And she just told my wife every day how she wished she could be a stay-at-home mom, but she'd sunk too much into her education and she couldn't turn back now. And, you know, you think about like this idea of like having the guts to not screw up the future just because of what we paid for the past. It's kind of an interesting concept, right?
It's very interesting. And I resonate. I really do.
Especially if we think about image, like what people think of us. I think for me, it's like, you know, you spend so much time pushing on something, especially, you know, in the entrepreneurial space, and convince, you know, trying to convince yourself and everyone else that this is so great and what you're doing is great. And then what if you start to feel different? And it's like, but I've already told everybody that I love this. Or,
I know.
I've got a reputation as this.
Right.
And like, how many temptations not to be authentic are there because
so
of our
many.
Past, right?
What if I just decided I didn't want to do this at all anymore? How many people would I disappoint? That's too much pressure.
Yeah.
Do you have kids? You said
four.
You do?
Yeah, I got four
kids. So you know, like, you've been through this, but for me, I just started having kids. We have two young ones, and my son doesn't care about my career. He doesn't care if I make funny videos. He doesn't care. Like, and before I had him, it was like I saw myself more from my audience perspective. And that was so defining. It was so defining. I just lost all words, but I think you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. As soon as you said that, I kind of thought the same thing. Yeah. My kids don't care what I do. You know what my kids care about? How many business trips I have to be gone on. That's what my
kids
care about.
Yes. And my kid, he's almost three. We're really starting to bond a lot. And, you know, he hates that I have to work a lot. He hates when I leave town. Actually, he gets excited when I go out of town now because it usually means I bring him something home. I don't know if he actually loves me or just what I give him, but he doesn't care, and that really reframed how I see myself. I'm like, why do I? Yeah. I live in such a,
you know, you think about. I mean, maybe it's not business travel. Maybe it's working evenings or weekends, right? Mm-hmm. And I talked my wife into letting us do an adventure year in the mountains. We're out past Park City in this cabin community that backs right onto the national forest, so we can go snowmobile, snowboarding out the back of the neighborhood without loading up, right? And and yet I still work evenings and weekends, and probably more than I would if definitely more than I would if I had the choice, right?
Right.
And so it becomes a question, like, I guess for me, the question is, am I willing to get rich a little bit slower to give my kids the dad that they probably deserve, right?
Right.
And yet there's so many external rewards for growing fast. And, you know, now that we're doing business with Forbes and the NBC affiliate, and we've got some big fancy clients, right? There's all these external rewards for that instead of the kind of the quiet rewards at home.
Right. And I'm about to enter the second half of my life, and I keep trying to make myself really face what I'll actually regret and what I'll actually be really grateful for when I get to the end. And I don't think I'll be counting how many viral videos I have on my deathbed. I really don't. Like, I think there'll be a small group of people around me, and I'll care about how much I experienced with those people. I really am just starting to think that friends and family are all that matter.
Yeah.
You know, this is getting so cliche. I can't stand it. I want to throw up in my mouth a little bit.
But it's, and you just know what? Like, true. It is this balance, though, right? I did have a more boring job. So we ran investment funds, been my own boss with you know, many, many staff for years. And then we decided to try having a job again because there was a skill set I wanted to learn. And a couple of years later, my wife was like, "You are not happy. We have got to do something else for you because this is killing you." And so, you know, I guess for me, it can kind of swing both ways of like, where is that balance beam of living our life, like not just, you know, not just living for the family. And where is that line? I think probably too often I'm too far on my side of it, but knowing that the pendulum can swing the other way as well. Right.
I 100% agree. I got some advice. I was considering delving a little more into the art of stand-up comedy. And this is right when I started having my second child, and I had a mentor say something really interesting. I confronted him with the problem. Like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I got to be home for bedtime. It's late nights. And he said, well, maybe what your kids need to see you do is something that you actually love and have a passion for. Maybe you need to kiss them goodnight, put them in bed, and then go after it, you know, and that's the truth. Like, I don't want to spend more time working and less than I should. I don't want to neglect the time. I don't want to cheat the time I have with my family and my friends. But at the same time, I want to model for them what it looks like to find meaning and find satisfaction in contributing to society.
Well, and I know we're out of time here, but I feel like what you talked about earlier is the best way to figure that out, which is be a little less busy and actually stare at life in the face instead of just letting life pass as we're busily answering email, right? And just really answering the question at a genuine level for ourselves, huh?
Right. Absolutely. And that's the irony of it all. My true intention for slowing down is so that I can do more better.
Yeah. It's almost kind of like less,
not to do less
but better. Less but better, or
right. Less, you know, better. It's a better way to say it.
Sure. Well, listen, appreciate all the time you spent with us today.
Yeah.
Obviously encourage people to check you out on Instagram at Trip Crosby. And that's Trip with two P's.
Yep.
But this is fun. I'm interested to, if you end up going another direction in life, you should come back on the show and tell us what you do instead.
Great. Thanks for having me, man.
You bet. Thanks again.
Take care.
Well, that's it for the episode. One other thing I wanted to tell you about, if you'll remember the guys from Convoy, in episodes back, Ken Free and Trent Mano, I went on one of their CEO trips to New York, and I met a guy named Brent Thompson, very successful entrepreneur. He was former CEO of Jive Communications, big company now, I think $300 or $400 million. Anyways, he started a new company called blipbillboards.com. I'm super stoked they're a sponsor now. But I remember a year and some ago when I met him, I thought it was genius. Instead of having to buy 6 months or a year's worth of billboard for thousands of dollars, you can buy 8 seconds at a time for like 10 or 20 cents. You pick what billboard you want it on, what time of day you want it to run. And it just puts so much power in the hands of marketers and CEOs who want to try something and see if it works. You can buy as many or as few as you want, change it as many times as you want. I think now our podcast is being advertised on billboards in like 18 different states because we have these guys as sponsors. We're pretty excited about it. Hope you check out blipbillboards.com. Thanks.